really good to talk to him and get those perspectives.
I bet that was.
And he, you know, unless you were on the budget committees and all that economic stuff, you just kind of said, what the heck is going on? And so, like, Barbara Roberts is good because she was on the right committees.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't. Bill Bradbury wasn't. So he, you know, what do you remember about the unitary tax? It was a one-day session, wasn't it? You know, that kind of thing. But it's just fascinating. He was deeply involved his first term with a way to run the fisheries on the coast.
Yeah, well, that was a big issue.
Huge issue. And so since I've talked to Paul Hanneman, I said, so did you work with or against Paul Hanneman? He said, no, actually on this one, Paul and I were right together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really good context.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good context.
Different times, weren't
they? Yeah, yeah, very different times.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to say that Vic created that. But no, it was truly different times.
Yeah.
But I would have to tell you that when Vic left, that's when it all began to deteriorate. And I don't know if it was because of Vic's quiet leadership, that's the only way I can describe it,
right,
that they all knew they had equal voice with him. Didn't matter who they were. If that kind of spawned a cooperative environment or not. I that goes through my mind all the time.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you, after we left, it's just...
Yeah, yeah. And for instance, I asked Bill about the... because Vic, especially that last year, it's how do we institutionalize this so that it's not going to go away? And then the Deadwood remark, and a lot of it is uprooted. A lot of it stays.
Mm-hmm.
It is in there. But a lot of it is changed. And, you know... Bill Bradbury said, you know, I didn't really, I kind of had a sense that was going on, but I was a liberal Democrat. I love Neil Goldschmidt. I mean.
They all did.
You know, it's just the context is just fascinating. My interview that I'm really looking forward to, if he'll talk truthfully, is Larry Campbell. Because Larry Campbell was coming on then, and Larry Campbell is the real hardcore conservative partisan that really takes hold, and in the early 90s, I mean, they win the legislature, but at what cost? And so it would be fascinating if he'll talk for real.
I would tell you that Larry was a very cooperative partner with me. When we were going into special sessions, of course, I had to monitor every minute.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, the governor was off somewhere. Tony Meeker would turn everything over to, I've lost his name.
Another senator?
Nope.
Okay.
It was his administrative.
Okay.
I've lost his name. Who liked to keep everything and they were going to be important. And, you know, if you want a favor from us, even though you're the governor's office, you're going to have to let me know.
Yeah.
Larry, absolute opposite.
Yeah.
I mean, I would pick the phone up and say, Larry, where are we? What do we need? What's the vote count?
Mm-hmm.
Or he'd say, come on down to the office. I'm going to meet with some of our people. You may want to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he really was, in that respect, great to work with.
Yeah.
But, and this is off the record, like so many, ego got the best of him toward the end. And
yeah. And so many of them. That's another thing I was telling Bill. Because a lot of the context was, you know, Vic didn't keep grudges.
Mm-mm.
You know, he came in the next day and it was like, I told him, interviewing Vic and reading the interview, the oral history, it's clear Vic remembers everything.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't care. Well, good. So we came up with a resolution. I wasn't in favor of it, or I was, and we moved on.
It's put in a file and it's gone.
Done.
Mm-hmm.
Done. And so I was telling Bill when I interviewed Paul Hanneman and Bill Markham, both of them, sweet guys,
oh,
but
I love
to the
those
right
dudes.
Of Attila the Hun.
Oh, God.
Both of them. But both of them came in, and they thought all they had to do was explain themselves, and everybody would vote with them. And guess what? It didn't happen. And both of them, for their whole first term, kept track of enemies and friends.
Mm-hmm. I bet they did.
And then at the end of their first term, both of them thought about it independently. I don't know if they talked about this at all with each other. Both of them said, well, that's not a good way to do things. And then both of them are in there forever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They find a comfort level. They find mm-hmm. a give and take. I would put Markham is more of a pure guy. Hanneman, I can see he's still, are you on my side, not mm-hmm. kind of thing.
But not as crusty.
But not as crusty. Not as crusty because, you know, it's like, you know, there it's not X, Y, and Z. It's X. You've got to think more like Vic. What do I need strategically to do to get to mm-hmm. this over here?
Mm-hmm. And I bet they expressed high regard for Vic, too.
Oh, yeah. 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 They did. Both of them, it's like, you know, they only had one disagreement with him. Or because both of them, well, especially Hanneman was important with things like the bottle bill and stuff.
Yeah, and he's never gotten due credit.
No, no.
Which really ticks me off.
Yeah, and he's writing a book, but he's got cancer, and so
yeah,
who
yeah.
knows. But Hanneman, because he was on the House side, didn't really know the dynamics that were going on the Senate side. And so when I told him about Vic and his principles, and the vaudeville is a classic one, yes, it's good for Oregon, but bad, it puts more stuff onto local business. So there's a conflict in the principles.
Mm-hmm.
And he never thought about that.
Probably
and,
not.
And probably had never, I mean, Vic wouldn't tell him that, especially when he was in the Senate.
No, but that was Vic's.
Yeah, yeah. And Hanneman thought about it and said, wow, I'm really sorry I put those guys in that position, but, you know, this is what mm-hmm. I was pushing, what I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just fascinating.
I would love just to be your shadow. I really would. I just would love to be your shadow.
Talking to all these people about all this stuff.
Yeah, but you're probably just about up to here now.
Well, but it's a good place to be. I mean.
But everybody's been cooperative and
yeah.
open.
Oh, I didn't tell you about Bob Backwood.
Oh, God, yeah, that's right. You told me you were going to go. Oh, yeah.
So he wouldn't let me record him, which didn't surprise me.
Why?
Because
he's been bit too many times.
He's been bit too many times. Mm-hmm. And every time he mentioned a woman, she was really easy on the eyes. And
he's still doing that?
He's still doing that on basically everybody. From a high school student he talked about in his 68 campaign. It's like, Bob, that's getting close to Neil Goldsmith territory.
God.
To, you know, it's just the way, you know, we hired her for this because she was really easy on the eyes. You know, the men would come around, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, there's a difference between being strategic and having this being the only way that you identify women.
Unbelievable.
And that would have all been on tape. And I have a couple of mentions in it, but,
yeah.
you know, that's not bad. I specifically wanted his view about how the Columbia Gorge came together.
Yep.
And from his point of view, I think he's exactly right. I don't think he knows what Vic did. What Vic and Spellman did wasn't the final version, but if Vic hadn't done it, there would have been no
there would have not been, yeah.
And so that's a crucial, crucial part, as well as then the phone call from the Reagan people at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But really, really good stuff from him. But he's reading from his diary. So I can't see it. He's got the paper in front of him. There's some things in there. He does something. He talks to Vic, and Vic says, and so he does a strategic thing where Packwood gets on the phone and calls all the editorial people to mm-hmm. put editorials out there. Mm-hmm. And so he brought the editorials in for me, and so I could have those. But, you know, couldn't see the diary. So, no, here's the fun part. A week ago yesterday, I'm in our archives. I interviewed him at the end of December. The phone rings, and Ava picks up the phone, the archivist, and I'm just working away on Vic stuff. And I hear, oh, I think Senator Packwood was interviewed a couple of weeks ago. And you go,
yeah.
And da-da-da-da. Well, actually, the author is here right now. So here's what happened. Packwood, because he's back in D.C. now, but he called his archive at Willamette. And said, Nicotia has got somebody who's got money to do a biography of him.
Yeah.
Now, how come nobody's doing that for me?
Yeah.
And it's like, well,
yeah.
There's a variety of reasons, but that's one of the reasons we decided to do this. If we can shake Antoinette Hatfield to loosen up on those things, if we can shake Bob to loosen up on those mm-hmm. things. But it was just, so it's like, well, that worked.
Well, in fact.
So who knows if anything will happen, but.
Elaine had called, let's see, did she corner me at Vic's memorial service? No, it was before Vic's memorial service. Uh-huh. And said she had heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, and here's who it is, and yeah. La, 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 la. Well, how'd you put that together? I said, we didn't. The university's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And she just kind of shook her head. Mrs. Hatfield, same thing. When yeah.
We had the thing at the university.
Yeah, and she was very shook.
Yeah.
Why can't Willamette do this? I mean, she was very, very irritated.
Yeah. But part of it is both of them have conditions on their archives.
Mm.
So wouldn't it be great if I'm done with this in, say, a year, year and a half, and then Packwood says, you want to write mine?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, yes, that's wonderful, but I have full access to everything, including your diary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Without that, no deal, and no more off the record.
But see, they want it. They want it positioned the way they want it positioned.
Exactly.
Where Vicatia says,
they said no.
Whatever. Whatever.
Exactly. Exactly.
But that's the way he was in life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got nothing to hide.
Yeah.
And if I do, let's get it out.
Let's get it out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But that was that deep confidence, too, that Vic had. I mean, I mean, you can look at Mark Hatfield, and we've all got something in our closet. But for most part, Mark Hatfield was pretty honest and had a lot of integrity. Mm-hmm. But
Bob's a deal maker, and
But I would tell you that's Jerry Frank's influence.
After talking to Jerry Frank, I totally understand that.
Mm-hmm. That's totally his influence.
There's
and
not
he's
a
been
word
influencing.
That he said that wasn't, how is this going to look when somebody, it's like, yeah, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. And he still to this day influences Antoinette.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And that's too bad.
I can imagine.
But, you know, what fun.
Yeah.
What fun.
Yeah.
I wish we could meet every week for coffee so you could just fill me full.
What's the next thing?
Yeah.
In terms of where things are, I finished 4 big chapters. You're going to add me. I'm going to be adding a lot to the Rajneeshis, apparently, which is great. I just reread my Rajneeshi chapter before I came today, so I had it in my head. And you look through these, and I read them, then my wife reads them for proofreading. I have my research assistant who reads them for proofreading, reads every site. Then it goes off. Just last week, I delivered what I have, which is like a... like 180 pages, to our librarians.
Oh, wow.
So they're kind of the first audience.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're making comments and stuff. And so that's
great.
That's great. And the sales tax one is done. I still have to call one more person. And so that'll go through it'll be with the librarians probably in about a week and a half.
I bet they love it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're just excited to see something and I'll be just, fascinating to sit down. You know, initial stuff is pretty positive, or how do you want me to read this? And it's like, any way you want.
Yeah, yeah.
This is heavily academic in my head. Do I need to read you the language, which I can easily do? Whatever you want. And just reading over the Rajneeshi thing, because, you know, these are big things. It's like, oh, this piece needs to go here.
And there's also two sides, maybe more sides than that, to the Rajneeshis. You know, I kind of reread, too. There was the public side.
Right.
And then there was the inner sanctum.
Exactly. And so I've got a lot of the inner sanctum, not this. But, you know, you told me a lot in our interviews. And so I see the problem is, for instance, I have one where, oh, it was at this point that Sheila and the nurse started thinking how do we start silencing people.
See how I remember that?
So, yeah, yeah. So that, from your guys's and from Bob Oliver, is like a year earlier than the media coverage says. And I've got both of them in there, and I'm going to resolve it to you guys. But that kind of stuff clearly is in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, putting this together is just a fascinating public-private.
Well, you know, this makes me sound like a sissy and scaredy cat and everything else. But, of course, you know that I've been really, really sick, doing fine now. And I wanted to sit and read through everything before I met with you, and I couldn't make myself do it. I had such a headache. So finally, this last week, I started reading through it, and I have to tell you, it made me sick to my stomach.
Okay.
No one will ever know, and I'm talking now from a personal standpoint.
Right.
I mean, the governor basically said, Jim, handle it.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, it was frightening. And when I started thinking about it, I literally got physically sick.
Yeah.
At the time, I never was frightened, but I had worries. Oh my gosh, I couldn't sleep at night. I worried, you know, it would take just one of those rednecks to upset everything. It would just take one stunt of Sheila's to upset everything. And I felt this enormous responsibility to make sure none of that happened.
Yeah.
And most of which had to be done quietly, not publicly. And I knew that at some point we were going to have to negotiate with them, but to what extent do we negotiate?
Right.
And I reminded myself that I reached a point, KD and I started talking quietly,
mm-hmm.
confidentially, which was helpful. And it was a constant effort to build trust in KD for me,
mm-hmm.
and it was also building trust for me in KD.
Yeah.
And I quickly realized that there was something in KD that was making him be very honest and forthright.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that perhaps it was because things were starting to crumble,
mm-hmm.
and he knew.
Mm-hmm.
He was a smart man, and he knew it was, but he had to contend with Sheila.
Yeah.
And that's what made me never ever negotiate with Sheila until the very end.
Yeah.
And there was only one time. And that's when I laid the rules down and said, there'll be no foul language, there'll be nothing but honesty. And the first time you foul up, the meeting's over.
Mm-hmm.
And you're on your own, don't expect anything from us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't, I think I told you, it wasn't a minute into the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
She started telling me what a I was and blah, blah, blah. And I said, slammed my fist down, said, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not taking credit for it,
mm-hmm.
but that's when it started turning.
Yeah.
That's when they
that's
started.
That's what Vic says very clearly in his mind.
Does
as
he?
Well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's when he thinks if they weren't already, they were clearly beginning to look for how do we get an exit strategy.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And, you know, I kept saying to myself, in typical negotiations, you got to give them a way to save face,
mm-hmm.
and we got to have a way
mm-hmm.
to save face. But we had nothing to give.
Yeah.
We had not one thing to give, Jim.
Yeah.
And that gave me the strength to say, sorry.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
Yeah.
And I wish you well.
Yeah.
But you're not getting anything out of the governor. I'm not kidding you. It made me a nervous wreck to go through that again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Imagine. You know, as I've been just in the past 2 weeks going and doing a variety of things, people have asked, so is the Malheur thing like the Rajneeshis?
Or don't you think that's been going through my mind?
Oh, yeah. And it's not now.
In a very minor way.
I mean, it's outsiders come in
yep.
and done things. But it isn't. And fascinating, they've got Les Seitz running the Oregonian coverage.
Yeah.
Because he knows all this stuff. Well, he doesn't know all this stuff. But, I mean, if anybody's good at that, he is. But there is part that is very similar, but I don't think that the Bundy gang knows it.
Mm-mm.
They want the land to go back to the state.
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea that we've got state land use laws.
Mm-hmm.
If they go to the state, they're going to, what they think the entanglement is 15 times bigger, and that's what the Rajneeshis did. They came and said, look, it's open land, it's nothing. And they had no
I don't
idea.
Think they were even aware of the land
no
use laws.
Yeah.
I don't think they even, they ran head square into them, and I don't think they even knew those laws existed.
No, I don't think they did either.
Mm-mm. But you're right. That's, say what you will about the land use laws. I don't care if you're for them or not a for them. They've saved Oregon more than once.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They really
Absolutely.
Have. Well, let me give you.
Okay.
This is just some more stuff I found, and you can do whatever
cool.
you want with it. This is a sweet note. He was doing this all the time, and this just happened to fall out of a file.
Uh-huh.
But I just give it to show you that he just was a sweet man.
Neat.
These were some more.
Oh, more doodles?
Yeah, and then he and I had a contest one time about doodling. That's with the yellow pages. And I think we were probably at a national governor's meeting or something. Because it's on page. These are the kinds of notes that I kept all the time, no matter where I was.
Yeah.
And I noticed.
Doodles everywhere.
Yeah, but this one I thought was very interesting on a styrofoam coffee cup.
That's great.
So those are yours.
Uh-huh.
I'm only giving you this. You can toss. You can do whatever you want. I do not want it.
Okay.
But it's just my first month in there.
Great. That's
fantastic. And the first 2 weeks are missing, but it just shows you what started coming at me right away.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that I think our office operated entirely different than any after us.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the last of my time with the governor. Mm-hmm. And again, here are my dumb notes.
Yeah,
Jim.
So that's great.
And you know what? If there's anything here that raises a question, fine. If not, toss them.
Okay.
I just thought you might pick up on something in there that...
Yeah. Fantastic.
Beyond that... I'm done with them. I'm absolutely done.
So this whole box is do with as I will.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Uh-huh. It is. Let me lock it back up for you. It's a good little box.
Yeah,
I like
it.
That's
great.
This is just extra stuff with the Rajneeshis that I don't know why I was keeping it all. You know, when I first went to work for the governor, I almost immediately we were faced with a Rajneeshis.
Yeah.
But in the very preliminary stages, you know, they were being billed as this wonderful, peaceful organization coming in, religious sect, and they were going to live off the land, and they were going to create, and there were, I remember pictures, I wish I still had them. I can remember seeing them in the paper of the this wonderful farmland being cultivated, and then it started going. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I know I did, just on my own, I did a whole lot of investigation because I didn't know who they were.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some press releases, and I don't know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But and you may have a lot of this already. What's this? Oh, this one you might, you may have already seen it, but it's when he had, was really questioned in one of his media availabilities,
and
we recorded it.
Great.
Again, this comes off of my yellow notes,
but
pretty accurate. Anyway.
Great.
Do what you want.
Okay.
I don't know why that doesn't...
Well, those big ones are like that.
I know. It just... And then I kept telling staff, I want you to put together kind of a history of the Rajneeshis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all this. I don't even know that we did anything with it, but it's a rough draft.
Yeah. Good. Great.
I don't remember we did anything. This, I don't know what you're going to do with it.
It's big.
But this is the sum total. I've taken everything out of the boxes.
Uh-huh.
These were the key players that I kept this always, and I added to it because it got so confusing.
Yeah.
All the different names and what part of the organization they represented. And when you're talking, you got to be sure you know that their role is this and not this. And so I kept this always and kept adding to it as we went through it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to guarantee accuracy because I don't remember.
Yeah.
And I just kind of scanned it. But and then these were some of our key governmental officials that were involved. And I have to tell you, if anybody ever did an audit and said, how much did state government spend on the Rajneeshis, I'm afraid it'd be...
Oh, yeah.
We were so consumed.
Yeah.
And all these agencies were involved, and I probably don't even have them all, because you know you get busy and you don't get them all down.
Right.
And I know I don't have all the fringe groups on here.
Yeah.
But just so you know. And you know what? All of these were just penciled, and I don't... My labeler wouldn't work, so...
Underneath, that's great.
Is the penciled title.
Okay.
That's how old this book is. And I went through the other night and put these on top of it, and they're coming off. So it was a make-do thing.
Okay.
This is the timeline.
Great.
Now, again, I'm not going to guarantee to you accuracy, but it's pretty damn close to This was my personal involvement.
Yep.
Mine and the governor's. And it may raise questions, and know that I'm available to answer anything.
Yep.
And over the years, I kept this going, and it's fairly well right to the end. There's 1990.
Yeah.
Some of which I picked up from news releases, some of which I picked up from whatever else. I just kept adding to
right,
it,
right.
Trying to bring it to a close. But that's the timeline.
Good.
These are the Oregon State Police reports, and that's probably a lot of what you got from Bob Oliver.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
Because they were to report to us. And,
yeah.
And
yeah, there's some weird little partial things, so I'll be looking at these and what I have from him and all that stuff.
And they're pretty valuable. I mean, that tells you, we really had the state police working that hard.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've already ascertained that, but
yeah,
they really did work it hard.
Let me show you. Let's see here. M-O-I-N, there we go.
Moyne, Major Moyne.
Yeah. What he made for that.
Well, I know, and I wish I could find Pancratz. Colonel Pancratz made me a Rolls Royce.
Okay. That's
with the
great.
Bhagwan and Sheila sitting in it.
That's great.
And it's about this big, and I've got to find it and give it to you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know what I've done with it.
That's great.
These are the governor's briefing memos, and probably you have not seen most of these.
Yep.
Some of them were from Bob.
Right.
Most of them are from me, particularly
right.
when he's been gone. And because I don't know how many trade missions he went on during all this time.
Yeah.
But many times it was briefing him. We'd always deliver a packet to him before he got into Oregon.
Yeah.
And of course, this was major to bring him up to date on it. So you may see some value in those.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
What's that? I guess it was just me making a list of the issues that were facing us. But why was banking on there? I don't know. Those are all briefing notes.
Great.
These are just, I don't know where all my yellow notes went, but this is some of them.
Okay.
It's just kind of backup.
Yeah.
But they're not all there.
Yeah.
What I was hoping was in there was the night that they did the actual dump of street people. Mm-hmm. But I do have a typewritten account of it, and I don't know. Maybe I had somebody type that up so it wouldn't get lost. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I was surprised to see that. Here's the dump record. This is the one that I'm talking about.
Okay.
That I had typed up.
Yeah.
Now, they were, street people were leaving the ranch, some of their own accord or some were being kicked out, and they were dribbling them out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we started working with Salvation Army, Michael Stoops, who drove us nuts, and a couple other agencies in Portland. We worked with Bend and we worked with Madras to make sure if street people were dumped that we took care of them.
Yeah.
At the same time, just let me check who that is. And then where was I, Jim?
They would dump them.
Oh, yeah, we wanted to make sure. At the same time, though, and at this point, I'm really having a lot of conversations with KD and the federal mediator, who, by the way, drove us nuts. I'm having conversations and trying to hold their feet to the fire because they have promised these street people, as they recruited them, that they would pay a trip home if they weren't happy at the ranch. Well, when they realized it was going to cost them over $1 million, they backed off on that and said, no, we're not going to do it anymore. Well, here are these poor people stranded who don't have the wherewithal. Not only that, Jim, what a lot of people don't know is that these people were so drugged up with Haldol, they were like zombies. Just horrible. So we were continually holding the feet to the fire, but at the same time over here, we're trying to raise money to help the Salvation Army and other facilities. We asked Salvation Army to work with the Dalles and I think Madras. Don't remember for sure, but we asked them to work with the other agencies as well. Nobody had money.
Yeah.
State had no money whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at the same time, we're fighting Vera Katz and Nancy Riles. And somebody else who, you know, we're at the point now where everybody wants to get their piece of the action.
Mm-hmm.
We had legislators who were going to be the heroes, and Nancy Riles and others who were going to be the heroines because they were going to have a special session to come up with money to take care of the street. Well, there was no money. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. Go mm-hmm. ahead and have your special session.
Mm-hmm.
We finally got them to back off. But this is literally done. You see what time it is? 9 p.m. I started.
Yeah.
It's a cold, horrible night in the desert. And Katie had promised me he would advise me when they were going to start. He's the one that told me they were going to start dumping.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, I'm very thankful for, because we were able to get things in place. We had the National Guard in place. We had the state police in place. Because we fully expected trouble, and a lot of them would get dumped in the desert with no transportation, no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So at night, cold as can be, they start dumping. And I'm on, I always at home had literally the red phone, the hotline.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have anything then.
Yeah.
I had that. I had a police radio. And it started really heating up, and you can see.
Yeah.
And God love my husband. He's sitting at the kitchen table with me. As I'm directing, mm-hmm. he's writing everything down for me.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And that's probably, now that I think about it, that's probably why I had this typed up, because it was in his handwriting.
Yeah.
But plus his heart, he sat right there with me. Then neither of us could sleep that night either.
Yeah.
But it was scary. You can see how much was going on.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know if you've seen that before or not.
No.
Probably not. Oh, yeah, here we're still going. I've got Pat Amadeo tracking down the bus lines. I've got Bob Oliver on another line for legal. I had to keep Denny informed in case of media. And, of course, I'm notifying the governor of everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's a busy time.
Yeah.
Busy time. I don't even remember when we ended. Here it is, 2:40 a.m. 2:36 a.m. briefed governor, 2:40 briefed Oliver. Wow. My conversations with Katie.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen those in a long time. Oh, again, I'm ignoring him. That was always my trick with him. If I mm-hmm. ignored him, he'd get panicky.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. This is where I got really angry with him because of the dumping.
Yeah.
He and I really had some words. Anyway, that's that. I could sit and talk about it all night, all day long, and I won't. These are just some of the records that we put together as we put together transportation. It's recording what the Rajneeshis had in the way of airplanes mm-hmm. and that kind of thing, plus what we did for Greyhound and Trailways when we started transporting the street people out. What's this? I don't know what that is. I don't care if you see
it. Hawaii? Intermountain?
I don't know.
Well, it'd be a mystery.
Cascade Division.
Baker, Oregon. Albany, Oregon.
Might have to do with bus lines.
Bus lines? Metro, Oregon?
Well,
yeah,
but no,
it
because it talks
no,
about
Corps Community
Captain...
Center.
Oh, these might
these
have been
Salvation
relief
Army?
Centers. Yeah, these
Salvation
might have,
yeah.
That might have been what that was.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jim. But
that's okay.
It's been a long time ago. Here is where we were working. This is when I called in Fiscom, Dave
mm-hmm.
Fiscom.
Mm-hmm.
And we started working with all the facilities. And that was his job, to keep that coordinated. And he worked with Ned Look. Do you remember Ned Look?
Mm-mm.
I can't remember who he was with. But it was a charitable organization, and he was able to help us with some funds.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember for the life of me. I guess as you get older, your memory goes. I don't know. That's what they say anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this says contingency plans,
uh-huh.
but I have to tell you it's not complete.
Uh-huh.
But it kind of gives you a clue of who I was working with all the time
right.
as we were putting together contingency plans.
Right. The man camp. When my wife read man camp, she said, "Why is it? Why are you calling it man camp? Because that's what they call
it."
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And this is when we were putting together the plans because we knew the dumping was coming. So that should be helpful to you.
Yeah, that's great.
John Mathis, you know, he called himself the conciliator.
Mm-hmm.
He was brought into Oregon as the mediator. For the life of me, I don't know how come, because we couldn't get the feds interested at all until they realized, and I don't remember, Jim, I'm sorry, I don't remember what finally kicked him in the butt. But I think, I don't know. I honestly can't tell you.
Do you remember, did you request him?
No.
Okay, because Mike Sullivan says that he called them to deal with antelope stuff.
Well, I was just going to say to you, I think one of the other involved did it. And I don't know that it was Mike Sullivan, but it definitely was not us.
Okay.
And the truth is, they were trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they constantly were badgering me. The governor's got to give. The governor's got to this. Mm-hmm. The governor's got to do that. Then they wanted the governor to set up a rumor control center that was staffed with Rajneeshis and non-Rajneeshis. No, we're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then they wanted a special task force. No, we're not going to do that. Why should we have another layer for all of us to work through?
Mm-hmm.
We got to be ready to roll on a minute's notice.
Yeah.
And finally, he brought in his boss from Washington, D.C., who pleaded with me, and I said, no, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
We have our plan, and we're sticking to our plan, and we're not deviating. So he claimed he changed everything 180 degrees, and then he came back to us towards the end and said, you know, we did all this for you. Now you need to change for us. We need the special task force. I said, no, we're not going to. They must have thought I was a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't cave, not one time.
Mm-hmm.
And the mediator actually caused us more problems with Rajneeshis than anybody.
Mm.
It was just awful. He'd go in there and promise Katie and Sheila he'd get us to roll over. And then Katie'd get mad because Mathis told him that we were going to do it. No, Katie, unless you hear it from my mouth, don't take it for gospel truth. You have to get it out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It went on and on. If we could have just taken them in.
Yeah.
It was horrible. Yeah. It was horrible. And I don't understand. It's kind of like when the governor got ready to go to the Middle East and then went back and got briefed by the national security and the
CIA and the state and everything.
Yeah, everybody. And they would all say, well, now they'll tell you this, but they don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
This is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to the next one, they'd say, well, you know, NSA's going to tell you this, but that's not it. We know the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of what was going on here.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a little bit about the fundraising. See, Ed, look, I have no idea. Oh, here it is. Oregon Community Foundation.
Oh, so, yeah.
Okay.
So that's a major.
Yeah. And that's who we went to.
Meyer Trust or something. So.
Mm-hmm. Not much in there, but that's. Fiscom tell me something. Again, probably not complete, but this is some of the legal stuff that went on.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to guarantee it completeness, but what you see is what was happening. There's quite a bit there.
That's good. Yeah, I've got.
Why have I got two legal tabs?
Really legal.
No, this is military. This should be tagged military, I think.
Tell the typeface.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, this should have been tagged military. You'll pick up on that. This is the beginning of the close down of the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much you've gotten on that, but it's kind of fun. And then this is just miscellaneous. Do what you want with it.
Okay.
This is what I would like back.
Yes.
I don't care what you copy out of it.
Right.
And don't ask me why I want it back. I don't know why.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It'll just be cited as in your collection.
I don't know why I want it back. But my kids keep saying, Mom, don't let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't want to tell the truth. I don't want to read it again. It makes me too nervous. We did have a couple run-ins with the AG. I'm the one that said, I want, we've got to have tighter coordination with the federal agencies here now, when they finally arrived on the scene. And they, everybody's off doing their own. Nobody was telling anybody what they were doing, ourselves included.
Yeah.
And I said, that just can't go on anymore. I want a meeting. And I went to Dave and asked if he agreed with it, because he was handling all the legal stuff. And he said, yeah, he did totally agree with it.
Yeah.
But at his suggestion, we didn't have it in the governor's office, because it would be too obvious to any Rajneeshis hanging around.
Right.
So we had it over at his office. And that's at the time I laid the law down that I wanted. I can't remember who was to report to me every morning. And just give me a rundown of what was happening. And that's basically what came out of that. I mean, we weren't instructing the feds what to do, but we needed to know. And it was also my way of keeping the governor informed. You know, it's like when they got ready. Did I ever tell you the story about them getting ready to go arrest Sheila and Pooja and in Germany? Not for publication, okay? There's two instances that happened out of the AG's office that should not be for publication. Oh, I was going to tell you, after that meeting, we had all agreed. The feds did not want them, any of the agencies mentioned that were here.
Right.
For all the right reasons. I perfectly understood that. They wanted that kept confidential. And we all agreed it would be kept confidential. We all agreed that none of us would talk to the media. Dave immediately went to the media. Immediately. But you know, it was that everybody wanted their...
Yeah.
It was that old ego thing. Anyway, governor's on trade mission to Taiwan. AG's office comes over, and we know where Sheila and Pooja and who was the third one? I don't remember now. It's in here somewhere. We know where they are. We know where they're in Germany. And we're going to hook up with the feds and go over and try to find them and arrest them, get them extradited back to Oregon. I cannot remember the two guys that came from the AG's office. It's probably buried in here. They come over and meet with me, and I want to make sure that we're in agreement with the plan. And I'm telling them that that's all well and good. Yes, I know the governor will be fine with it. He understands he's in Taiwan, and he will not tolerate any surprises of any kind. So you've got to let me know when things start happening so that I can get a hold of him, because when he flies back into Oregon, we don't want him hit with all this. Oh, yeah, absolutely, Jerry, we agree. I said, okay, but now tell me how we're going to do this. Well, they said, when we're in Germany, what we'll do is call you, because we're very worried about wiretapping. We've had our office swept, I don't know how many times, so is the AG's office. We'll call you, and we'll tell you that we're in Germany, and we went shopping. And we found some beautiful beer steins. Okay, well, that means we know where they are. Okay, that's good. But if we call you and say, we went shopping, we found these beautiful beer steins, and we bought them. We bought three of them. That means we got them. Or if we bought one, we've only got one. I said, great, but how will I know who you got? Well, all we really care about is Sheila, so we'll tell you that the one is a magnificent beer stein. You'll really like it. Okay, okay, that's all right. And I'm starting to laugh. They are too. Then the third one is, we'll call you and say, hey, we bought three beer steins, and they're all musical. That means they're talking.
That's great.
To this day, I still laugh about it. Then one summer, and I can't tell you what year it was, things weren't really bad, but they were heating up. And I always say it's the Deschutes that ran along there, but it was not the Deschutes River. It was the...
Along the Rajneeshi.
It wasn't the Deschutes. It was... I've got a mental block on it. Anyway, I get a call from Katie that they're really insulted. Well, what's the matter, Katie? And this call is at my house. What's the matter, Katie? Well, there's four or five guys from the AG's office on a raft that are floating by the ranch, and they're mooning us. I say, Katie, it can't be anybody from state government. Oh, yes, it is. We recognize them. We had our binoculars on them.
Uh-huh.
I said, I don't think so, Katie, but I'll check it out. So Monday morning, I call the AG's up. It was true.
So this is the same river where the locals were complaining because all of a sudden there were naked Rajneeshis skinny dipping?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's great.
So there's always fun and bad things. You know, there really is.
Yeah.
But it sure tickled me.
As you're thinking about this, and I'll be looking through here.
Wait a minute. There was a set like this that had my handwriting at the top. What did I do with it? I don't know. What did I do with it? Oh, I may have had it. I just had notes that I wanted to cover with you on it. I do. It's right here. Okay, go ahead. Ask me your question.
In October 1983, Dave Frommeyer comes out with his opinion that Rajneeshpuram is a religious organization. And so I got the governor signs off and says, well, you just go pursue
Let's
that.
Let's go for it. Mm-hmm.
But there's a decision made to deny state money to Rajneeshpuram for their 911 and that kind of stuff. Do you remember where that decision came from? Is that, I mean, I've got a memo from somebody in the executive department or something saying we can't release this because there's been a ruling. But... Do you remember?
Well, it had to do. Well, I'm sure it came. It may have come up. I don't know.
Okay.
It might be in here because I know there is a note in here where they're upset that we're not giving them money for their 911 system, and it's because I think that had an entanglement with both federal and state.
Yeah, because it is the 911 system does have, well, the feds also then begin to deny the Rajneeshpuram licenses for guns and things. And so the reason I ask is because KD writes, and he's exactly correct, that the statute says that this is something that's got to be decided by either legislation or the courts.
Right.
And it's totally on an opinion from the AG at this point. But the money is stopped. And so I'm just trying to chase this down. I talked to Bob Oliver about it because later on somebody writes to Bob Oliver and says, it's just a person from the community, right? He says, they have guns over there, that's bad. And he said, well, until it's resolved whether or not they're a city, cities have the right to have these guns. And so I said, well, that seems contradictory with this side that said that we're denying them state money. For him, it's not contradictory because as a religious organization, you can still have guns.
That's right. I would agree with that.
As a city or not a city, you don't have access to this money. But it still begs the question because the guns they wanted were the ones the ATF had to approve, which can only go to cities. So... It just, there's just questions in here.
I just wonder if there's something in this legal file, but like I said, this is not complete, because most of that stuff I shipped right off to Bob.
Yeah.
I didn't want to get... Okay, three related questions regarding the City of Rajneesh Peace Force. It could be in that.
Yeah,
certify an employee of the Peace Force. Second, it's all about.
So it's what's the date on this? It's probably earlier. It's probably like November 83, December 83. So
almost would have had to been.
Yeah, because I've got it.
And these are in here by.
The opinion is in there in October 83, and it's like in November. I see the first. We're not going to give you money stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I know he called me about it. Yeah, see, these are all getting too late now.
Yeah.
I can't answer that question for you. I know that we did withhold the money.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure where the money came from.
And it wasn't that much. I mean, it's...
No.
It's a few tens of thousands of dollars at the most.
I can't remember where the...
And they ended up with a workaround because they said, oh, we've taken over antelope and they're in.
Well, and so, they did that with antelope on everything.
Yeah.
You know, what they did would contract services through antelope.
Right.
And then antelope, Rajneeshis,
right.
would charge huge amounts for contracting that they'd pay to Rajneesh Param. Now all of a sudden the property taxes in antelope are just escalating like you could not believe.
Yeah.
Which caused a whole nother schism.
Yeah.
I could be in here somewhere in my notes,
Okay.
But I can't tell you.
Yeah.
I really can't.
Let's see here. Another question. When did law enforcement start coordinating? And so we've got state and local. And so they're going from, we can safely say, beginning of 82. But when did the feds come in to start coordinating?
Well, feds didn't coordinate our feds do not coordinate our law enforcement.
Okay. So you were basically getting information from them?
They were in doing their own investigations.
Okay.
They were primarily interested in wiretapping.
Right.
Drug trafficking and the weapons.
Okay.
And they were doing their own investigations. Early on, I'm going to say, this might be a little bit helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Although I just pulled that off my computer. It's not much. But let me see. Bhagwan Rai, Vishwastan. Somewhere along here, I think, here it's in 81. No, early 82. Mm-hmm. The governor called in the state police and immediately assigned them. Ordered them to coordinate with all the local law enforcement agencies,
mm-hmm.
monitor, report.
Mm-hmm.
He really laid it to them, said, you know, I know it's going to put stress on you, but this is what we got to do. We got to have ears to the ground.
Okay.
And even ask them to try to get inside the ranch, which they did.
Yeah.
They did. That was the coordination of law enforcement.
Okay.
The investigations didn't happen until much later on, it's in here somewhere, Jim, mm-hmm. but I think I'm going to say late 83, early 84,
okay.
they began, because they weren't interested.
Yeah.
And that's honest to God truth. It was like,
Yeah.
It's just a little fracas out in Oregon.
Yeah.
Until they began to realize this is getting bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they came in and their focus, and that's why I had the meeting. That was about the time I had the meeting.
Right.
They were out doing their investigations, not informing anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I said, nuh-uh, this can't go on. We've got to be informed so that nobody crosses over the other.
Okay. Because I know the INS was involved from the very beginning.
That was the other federal issue,
yeah.
immigration issue.
Yeah, and that ends up, it's fascinating to me, with all this stuff at the end, it's just basically INS stuff.
Mm-hmm. In the end, was what they could really hang their hat on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Now, I need to tell you a couple of stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you'll be tempted to use it or not, but you need to know that my husband's former wife was a Rajneeshi. I don't know if I had told you that.
Mm-mm.
Full blown.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see in my notes mention of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not by name, but it's in
mm-hmm.
there. She very early on became a Rajneeshi, and the first we were aware of it was when she was getting ready to attend their first big festival they had.
Mm-hmm.
Came to us and wanted to borrow enough money, $10,000, to register. And we said no. And he was shocked. Tried to talk her out of
mm-hmm.
being a participant. Oh, no, she really believed in everything the great Bhagwan was doing and
mm-hmm.
la, 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 bought all the stuff. Well, I need to tell you, he was paying her an awful lot of alimony, an awful lot of child support. Not only that, he had turned the home over to her scot-free.
Mm-hmm.
Big, beautiful home out here
mm-hmm.
in South Sale. But what does she do? She takes mortgages against the house to go to these festivals. Well, nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
But now my husband starts worrying because we know and have proof that they're taking people's assets.
Yeah.
And he was right. He said, what if they coerce her into turning over that house? That's all she has.
Mm-hmm.
That's all she and my children have. So Bob Davis, who was a good friend of ours, I don't know mm-hmm. if you knew Bob Davis, also happened to be the lobbyist for the Rajneeshis,
right.
which shocked us all. But obviously, big money.
Mm-hmm.
He calls up Bob, says we want to have dinner with him, and Al laces him good. He says, this is my ex-wife, and I'm telling you, you better get to your Bhagwan. I can remember those words. You better go to your Bhagwan and tell him if he touches any of her assets, I'm coming after him. And Bob says, take care of it, Al. I'll take care of it. Well, about a week later, he did. He came back. He said, don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she continues to go to the festivals.
Mm-hmm.
Then we begin to get into the voter fraud stuff, the streets mm-hmm. people. And all of a sudden, she's remarrying. And she's marrying a guy that's just come over from Scotland. So I happen to mention it, and I can't tell you who I mentioned it to. I don't know mm-hmm. if it was Dave Fronmeyer. I know it wasn't one of the feds.
Mm-hmm.
But I mentioned it to somebody, and they said, oh, my God, Jerry. We are suspecting marriage fraud.
Oh, yeah.
What can you tell us about it? I said, all I can tell you is that she's married this guy from Scotland. He is not a citizen of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But they're married, and he's living in the home now with her. And he supposedly has a divorced wife in Scotland and has a child. Well, they went after that, and sure enough, it was one of the fraudulent marriages. Mm-hmm. Well, you need to know that Norma Paulus and I never did really see eye to eye. Got along fine, and
mm-hmm.
business-wise it was fine, but Norma was always sneaking yeah. around trying to get information, and I just kept my mouth. She'd call me to have drinks with her at their home in the evening on my way home from work. It was only to pump me.
Yeah.
You know.
I've had several other people talk about her as being sneaky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Always pumping me and never yeah. getting a thing out of me. But anyway, all of a sudden, Norma Paulus calls me and says, and they lived in the same neighborhood as my husband's
mm-hmm.
ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
She calls me and she says, I hear that Barbara is a Rajneeshi. I said, mm-hmm. I said, I'm surprised you didn't know that. She said, I also hear that she's in part of the marriage scam. I said, how'd you hear that, Norma? Well, she just had heard it. Would I be willing to testify in court to that? No. Mm-mm. I wouldn't. Well, we got to have. She said, give me details. Can you convince Barbara to come forward? I said, of course not. She's not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we finally shut that conversation down. Next thing I know, the receptionist calls into my office and says, there's a lady out here who wants to talk to you. Her name is Barbara. Here's my husband's ex-wife. Now, we weren't enemies. We were mm-hmm. on a friendly basis, but she walked in with fire in her eyes, and I'm telling you, she is mad at me. I have told the world that her marriage is fraudulent. She wants mm-hmm. me to know it is not, that she's in love, and this guy's from Scotland, and la, 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 la. But in that conversation, she tells me that she's living on the ranch. She's now living at Rajneeshpuram. And I said, Barbara, how long are you going to live there? Well, she said, at least 2 months. Ding, ding.
Mm-hmm.
Become a resident in Wasco County, be able to vote.
Mm-hmm.
It got very ugly. Got mm-hmm. very, very, very ugly.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted you to know that there was that involvement.
Yeah.
Very definitely.
Yeah.
Part of the sham marriage.
Yeah.
They divorced shortly after the vote.
Mm-hmm.
But she's still practicing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't call themselves Rajneeshis yeah. now, but
goes to the Osho cafes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She holds meetings in her home in Portland.
Mm.
Sad.
Mm. Yeah, the one that I have in the book is not an Oregon one, but Congressman Ryan, who was killed at Jonestown.
Well, his daughter was a big Rajneeshi.
Yeah, you
and you'll see that in my records.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm shocked yeah. when I find out that she's,
yeah.
after what they've gone through, and mm-hmm. they're even loaning money.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. Les Zeitz has a story about you and KD meeting. Mm-hmm. Is that pretty much what happened? What he wrote?
I don't remember what he wrote. Katie and I met several times, so.
This is, I think, the first time you met. So there's you and Sheila are there. Sheila stomps out. Katie comes back in the door and says, let's talk.
That's the last time I met with Sheila.
Okay.
That's the last time. That was the secret meeting. There was nobody else. There
right.
was me, Katie, Sheila, and some of Sheila's, probably Pooja, but I don't remember who mm-hmm. was with Sheila. Maybe mm-hmm. there was Katie and maybe two or three others with her.
Okay.
John Williams was with me as my protector.
Mm-hmm.
And there may have been one other individual.
Mm-hmm. So you had met with Sheila before this, and this is just the last straw?
No, this is the only...
The only time. Mm-hmm. The only time. This is the she, 1 minute in.
Up to this point, I've been meeting with Katie.
Okay.
Katie's pleading for us to meet with Sheila.
Right.
Finally, he calls me in panic and says, Jerry, you've got to. Please promise me you'll sit down and talk, because things are getting really bad.
Yeah.
And I said, well, under what circumstance? Well, we want to come get you and fly you over to the ranch. No. I'm not going, well, state police would not have ever allowed that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
At the point, they're protecting me, and they said, you go over there, and who knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I won't do that. He said, well, what if we come and pick you up, and we meet at the at Hotel Rajneesh in Portland?
Mm-hmm.
Nope. I said, right now, Katie, I'm going to tell you, I am not going to meet in any of your facilities. And well, he said, we're not going to meet in the governor's office. I said, that's fine. I said, if you are serious about the meeting, I will find a neutral place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll need to know who you're bringing. But I said, let me give it some thought. And understand that if we have a meeting, it will be under the strict rules that I set, nobody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we all got together and talked about it. Myself, I don't know if the governor was around then or not, John Williams... Even General Miller from the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. I don't think there were any feds involved, but I don't really remember. And
mm-hmm.
it's something I didn't record because it was a very secret
mm-hmm.
meeting. Well, that night, it was a dark, rainy, must have been fall, because it was dark early. And it was so undercover, it still tickles me to this day. They picked me up underneath the Capitol building. And then we go up onto the main street and pull in front of the Capitol building, which
mm-hmm.
I wasn't too sure about. What was that all about? And this seedy-looking, gruffy, oh, God, just like, walks up to this unmarked police car that I'm not sure who's driving us, but General Miller's sitting in the front. John Williams is on the passenger side in the back, and I'm on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And John Williams rolls his window down, and this guy talks to John Williams, and like, you got a cigarette? And John Williams, who doesn't smoke at all, hands him a cigarette, and they say something, and rolls the window back up, and we go. I said, okay, John, what was that all about? Well, that was some of their undercover guys from the Rajneesh Param who were giving him last-minute report on what they had heard on... I mean, we really did have great insight,
mm-hmm.
thanks to the state police. And the state
yeah.
police never got the credit they deserved.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was message passing.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
To this day, I still laugh about it. So we met in the public service building in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Everything closed down. It
mm-hmm.
was late enough at night that there was nothing around at all. And Sheila, we got there early, and Sheila and Katie, two or three others of theirs walked in. We greeted everybody friendly, on a very friendly term. We sat down. I remember I'm sitting behind a desk. John's sitting to my left. And I thank Sheila for being willing to meet. But I tell her that, you know, her temper tantrums have caused her a lot of problems, and there can be no temper tantrums tonight. And Sheila, I will not tolerate any of your foul language. Mm-hmm. And the first time it happens, that's the end. Mm-hmm. I'm closing the meeting down and it's all over. Well, I can't even remember now exactly how fast it happened, but rather fast.
Yeah.
And she started calling me a little blah, 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 because I wouldn't give her first demand. Mm-hmm. And I literally did slam my fist down and said, "Meeting's over, Sheila. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Out. We're done." Well, her temper went. She jumped out of that chair and said to her henchman, "Come on, we're leaving." And they walk out into the hall. Mm-hmm. And Katie, I still have that vision vivid in my mind. He's walked out, mm-hmm. but he comes back and he leans around the door and he says, "Jerry, promise me you'll keep talking. Please promise me. We really need you to keep talking." I said, "You and I'll talk later." That was the end of it. Driving home, I am feeling... I remember saying to John, "I'm not sure I did the right thing." And John's not saying much. Mm-hmm. And I thought, "Ugh, I maybe have blown this." But yet in the back of my mind, Jim, I'm saying to myself, I made it clear to her, and I had, mm-hmm. that we would not accept threats, because any threat she wanted to throw our way, we were ready to handle. Mm-hmm. And those were the governor's instructions. He mm-hmm. always said, "Jerry, make it clear to them mm-hmm. that no matter what they threaten, we can handle anything they throw our way." And that's what I had said in the preface
yeah.
of the meeting. So I kept reminding myself, okay, there's nothing we can give them. We can't. Main three issues: the land use issue, mm-hmm. the city, mm-hmm. the immigration issue, and they wanted the Bhagwan to become a citizen of the United States. Mm-hmm. And all three of them, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. I don't care if I want to. I can't mm-hmm. do it. So I finally convinced myself, no, I hadn't blown it. And I will tell you, that's when I think the turning point was.
Yeah.
I really do. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I turned the corner, but the fact that I shut it down, made it clear we weren't going to discuss anymore, that I showed a little bit of anger, mm-hmm. I think Sheila went home, got scared, and decided,
yeah,
we're hurting.
Yeah. Did you consider KD an informant before that meeting? Or is it just after that?
He was an offhanded informant.
Okay.
We hadn't gotten to the point yet where I was trying to build trust or he was trying, but he, for some reason, had decided he could talk to me. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But after that, he and I got on the telephone, mm-hmm. and we had a long conversation. And I said, "Katie, I will help you in any way I can, but you understand the issues, the paramount issues, neither the governor nor I can bend on. Mm-hmm. But I will help you anyway because I sense trouble. I sense mm-hmm. you're running out of money. I sense that things are beginning to crumble. You've got the street people problem." And I said, "I really would like it if we could work together." Mm-hmm. And he said, I can remember him saying very clearly, "Would they call me?" They addressed their letters that way too. Something Jerry, not dear Jerry, but blessed Jerry.
Yeah,
or
there's beloved. There's,
beloved.
Yeah,
I think it was beloved. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that on some other
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. Beloved Jerry, I will always trust you and I want you to always trust me. And if we work together as partners, mm-hmm. we can get through this. Mm-hmm. That's just indelibly inscribed in my mind.
Yeah.
And that's when he became our absolute, he's the one that tipped us off on everything. Mm-hmm. Everything. And he called me all hours of the night. Oh my God. But that was okay. You know,
yeah.
he was trying to show that he was willing. And I think he was afraid. I think saw it coming down. I think he'd lost faith in Sheila. Mm-hmm. Bhagwan, I think, was still silent at that point.
Yeah, he starts talking in 80, early 85 maybe? Mm-hmm. Maybe late 85.
Late 85, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think KD was... Mm.
Yeah.
And I will tell you the one disappointment I had is that when I made it clear to the feds and to RAG that KD was very cooperative and that we would never have gotten through a lot of the things we got through had it not been for KD, and I was hopeful that as they began to make their arrests, that they would take that into consideration. And they did. But the judge wouldn't. He still sentenced him to 2 years in prison. And we asked for no prison time, but put in the witness program.
Yeah.
Well, they still put him in prison for 2 years and then put him in the witness program. Mm-hmm. That still bothers me to this day.
Yeah.
But maybe it's because I kind of got emotionally attached to KD too.
Yeah.
But he was doing everything to be helpful.
Yeah.
And honestly, I mean, he wasn't misleading us.
Yeah. Another parallel with the Bundy boys.
Mm-hmm.
That's the judges saying, you know, this is the interpretation, and coming back and saying, no, here you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I don't know where KD is. Somebody told me he's down the L.A. area now.
Yeah, I had originally said where he's still in the witness protection program, and then
no,
I came across
out.
Him, came across as, oh, no, he's selling real estate or something.
Yeah, I think that's, I was going to say, he's working in a law office or real estate. I think it is real estate.
Yeah.
Well, somewhere on my computer I ran across it. I had started, I don't know why I did it, but I started writing a piece about the Raj Nisi from the governor's office viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And I never did finish it. And I'd like to finish it because, you know, Jim, when we were doing this, we had a small staff. And I know you said that you checked that our staff wasn't that much smaller than others. The difference in our staff was that we only had key staff members, and unlike other governors, we did not borrow staff from any agencies.
Right.
It was just us. Furthermore, we were besieged. It was like war against us. We had to get through the election. We had all those budget problems. I was in charge of economic development, and you know what we were doing there.
Mm-hmm.
The governor had also assigned to me a juvenile crime. He wanted me to find a way, to put it in his words, I don't want to keep feeding the pipeline with all this juvenile crime stuff. I want to stop it before it gets to the pipeline. Mm-hmm. Find a way, Jerry.
That's easy.
Yeah, just like. So I had pulled together a task force of judges and juvenile crime experts, and we were working on that, trying to get that accomplished. We had the Rajneeshis, and then we had Governor's Trade Mission after Trade Mission. And he was never there, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
He was never there. And I'm not complaining, but he just wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, I can say that's okay. He had faith in us. But the other hand, it was a tough time for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, no one will ever know how tough it was. It was just more than I ever bargained for.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the when we were deciding to go arrest Sheila in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get word to the governor, and he's in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no sweat. I'll call DC and they'll give me a what do we call them? There was a line that was
a secure line.
So I call. Well, that's the one country we don't have secure lines for. Oh, okay. Well, I send word that I'm going to be calling the governor. And, of course, Taiwan time is different than our time. And I got to find a place because I don't trust state phones.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust my phones at home. And don't let me forget to tell you about my home.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm out at the old colonial house here in Salem with my husband, and he knows what I'm up to. And I get a hold of the owner, Reuben Worcester, and I tell him, I'm going to need to use your phone. I need to make an important telephone call to the governor in Taiwan. Promise the charges won't be against yours, but can I utilize, they had offices upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
He said, sure. So at the right time, I go up there, make this call to Taiwan, I get the governor on the line, and we're talking in code.
Mm-hmm.
And later he tells me, I thought I knew what you were telling me, but I wasn't positive. But he read me. I mean, he got it.
Yeah.
And I was trying to tell him, look, we're going in for the arrest. It's going
to
happen. Which went, it was fine, but at least he didn't get.
Yeah.
And those were the trials and tribulations we were going through.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to keep him informed, never wanting to, I knew what my direction was. I mean, he was very clear what I was to do.
Mm-hmm.
But Jim, to this day, I'm puzzled why he had that faith in me. I mean, mm-hmm. I was just a dumb fraud working in a governor's office.
Mm-hmm. And scaring the hell out of the speechwriters.
That's embarrassing. I never had done anything like this in my life.
Yeah.
But he had absolute total faith. And I look back on it and I think, oh.
Yeah.
What if?
Yeah.
One time he came back from a trade mission. Was it, he was running for office or was he, I don't remember the time. He was either gone trade mission or he'd been out traveling the state. Mm-hmm. But he was gone mm-hmm. all the time. Late at night. Must be 10 o'clock at night and I'm working in my office and he's working in his office. Have you ever been in there?
Mm-hmm.
And you know there's a passageway between. All of a sudden he walks in my office. Now the governor never walked in my office. And I'm sitting at my desk doing something and he comes over and doesn't sit down. He said, I have concern, Jerry. I said, oh, okay. He said, I'm getting the feeling that there are decisions being made around here without my input. Jim, that was like, he sucked me right in the belly. Mm-hmm. I knocked the wind out of me. I said, what do you mean? Well, he said, I just get the feeling. He said, remember I told you that I'm the governor and I want it to stay that way? I said, but governor, you know that I have not made any decision that was not based on what your principles were or what you told me to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just thought I should let you know I had that feeling. And he walked out. Well, I had a letter of resignation in my top drawer,
mm-hmm.
which is what you do.
Oh, yeah?
And I'm sitting at my desk just absolutely flabbergasted. I mean, I'm close to tears.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, maybe this is the time I have to do it. If he's losing faith in me, I've mm-hmm. got to get out of here. And I decided, now I'm going to go home and talk over with my husband. About that time, he comes back in, and he said, I don't know if this is appropriate or not. Can you stand up so I can give you a hug? So I stood up, and he hugged me, and he said, I apologize. He said, that was unfair. He says, I think it's because I'm gone so much that I feel like I'm losing hold. And he mm-hmm. said, I'm not. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want you to know how thankful I am for you. And he always said that to me. I am so thankful for you. But that was one rough time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I understand why he was feeling that way.
Yeah.
But I honestly, Jim, I never ever took a step without him knowing it or me being confident it's the right one.
Mm-hmm.
Because not my thinking, the governor's thinking.
Right.
And then one other time he called me in. We were sitting in his office late at night again. And he said, I need to ask you a question, okay? He said, how's your husband doing with all this? I said, what do you mean, Governor? He said, well, you know, it's a little unusual for you to be in the position you're in, and you're not home much, and you're viewed to have certain amount of power, and how's he handling that? I said, do you realize, Governor, that I didn't take your first offer? I said no to you.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the primary reasons I took your second offer is because my husband had his foot in the middle of the back and said, you never tell a governor no. Oh, okay, well, I just want to be sure Al's okay with this.
Yep.
So those were the kind of the human side, the old-fashioned side of him. Cute. I look back on it and I think it's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me about your home phone.
Oh, my home phone.
Your home.
You know that we are convinced the governor mm-hmm. was poisoned.
Yeah.
And there was never any fuss made out of that.
Yeah.
On purpose.
Yeah.
What you don't know is that we are 99% certain they tried to set my house on fire. We lived up here on the hill. We had dining room window. Underneath the dining room window was the planting. And then he went in the front door.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Christmas morning. And I always had all the family for Christmas Eve and then for Christmas Day dinner. And I'm getting the table set for Christmas dinner. And I look out our dining room window. And these plants. And mind you, this is Christmas time. It's cold. It's mm-hmm. wet outside. And the plants are all charred.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no foliage left on them. They're black. They've been burned. They were pretty much certain that that was Rajneesh's. They started putting security on my house and after that. And I can't remember which Christmas. It had to be either 84, probably 84. But you know, that was their method of operation, intimidation and threat. That's the way they operated.
Exactly. That's one thing when the poisonings happened at the salad bars. Bob was telling me that, you know, there was some sense, could this be the Rajneeshis? But for him, they weren't taking credit for it. They weren't being a terrorist group that says, we hijack your airplane and this is what we want. It just happened.
But you understand, so, that was their test.
Yeah, but that was their test. But still, because he says he was a skeptic on them from the beginning. But it took a while for people to say that must have been them for it to really kind of gel together. Because they weren't taking credit for things. They were just doing stuff.
Well, like the fire in Wasco County.
Yeah.
The fire in the Wasco County building.
Yeah.
That surprises me, that Bob, because we were pretty sure. Because they'd also, we had evidence they also tried to contaminate the water supply.
Yeah.
That was all at the same time.
Yeah.
So was the fire.
Yeah.
And I wish, I went through everything, because I wanted to give you the report on the fire at the Wasco County.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was the courthouse, but it was certainly the planning.
It was the planning.
Yeah, it was the planning office. It was like, I had the entire report on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the Cats and Jammer Kids, the mistakes they made. It was it was just laughable. I would sit and read that and laugh myself sick that they didn't know what they were doing. I mean, it was just like kids pulling pranks.
Yeah.
That surprises me that Bob said that. Mm-hmm. But Bob is a different kind of guy.
Yeah. I'll have Bob questions later on. As we get into staff stuff, but that's another interview.
Oh, you mean we got more?
Oh, you betcha. You betcha. This is, I'm just asking you 9 through 14.
I will shut up now.
No, no, these are other things that are non-Rajneeshi things. So here's other Rajneeshi stuff. When did the bugging become an issue for you guys? Because it's kind of, it becomes very public when the Bhagwan, after Sheila leaves, Bhagwan says, we were doing all this stuff, and all of a sudden, the ranch is swarmed, the hotel is swarmed. But when did you guys...
Quite early on. I can't tell you, but I'm going to say probably 82, 83.
Okay.
And I don't know what triggered it. I do know that there were things that would come back at us that we began to get suspicious. You know, there was a horrendous leak about the investigations.
Mm-hmm.
But something came back at us, and actually, Denny, in his paranoid personality, came to me and said, you know, I'm thinking we should be sweeping our office.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were all over the building, everywhere. Oh, I said, Denny, not necessary. He said, no, he said, you know, just my advice. I said, okay. So the governor I talked about, and he said, but if you can get somebody to sweep it, let's sweep it. Now, we never found anything.
Mm-hmm.
We never, ever did. Mm-hmm. But that was before there was any even conversation.
Okay.
And I have to tell you, the best of my recollection, it was Denny's paranoia that caused it to happen for us.
Mm-hmm.
But then I made everybody else aware of it. They needed to be careful.
Yeah. Yeah, because by the end, I mean, Vern Duncan was having his office swept. And I don't think he ordered it, but I think the state police, because he was dealing with them.
Well, he was dealing with them. He went in there and jerked the education from them for a short time.
Yeah.
Not for very long.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. Exactly. Let's see here. Oh, National Guard maneuvers in Clarno. Is there anything on that in here? You got the military section.
I don't know.
Because finding dates, I mean, it's not like it appeared in the newspapers.
No, we were very, what's the Clarno issue? We were very quiet about all that.
It's just where they were on maneuvers.
And that was the whole 85. Gist of it. We just said to General Miller, we're very concerned. Governor's carrying the state of emergency and martial law.
Right, in his pocket.
Mm-hmm. And
it was the second legal with military.
I think it was, yeah. And I remember we were sitting talking with General Miller, and the governor said, you know, we're getting close to the point where one little thing could cause havoc.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way you could find a possibility to be in the area?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. He said, we'll just have maneuvers over there. He said, we've got to do training all the time. And that's exactly what they did. That was how quickly that happened.
Mm-hmm. Vic was very proud of it because the type of maneuvers they were doing were training so the feds paid for it.
Victor. Shame on you. Okay, I don't know if it's in here or not. I don't think I have it. I bet it's not in writing at all.
Yeah. I mean, so much of this is not in writing.
Yeah. I've been toward the end.
Yeah, I would guess, I'd say it's probably September, October in
85. Mm-hmm. I know somewhere I've got the date when we pulled the military away.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not.
Okay.
Oh, that, no, I was looking in the wrong place. That was the close down. God, military something else, isn't it? Jeez. Now, this is all what they did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they actually had it. Look at that. Well, see, here's Madras.
Right. And there's our, area of operations. That's great. So there's the plan.
Mm-hmm. But that's the plan.
Yeah.
Pilots, crew chiefs.
Yeah. The whole shebang. That's great.
Yeah. I don't know if you can get out of that what you need, but I bet you can.
Yeah.
Medical evacuation, arrest form.
That's right. Good. Okay.
General Miller was very proud of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
I gave you the book, the notebook of the pictures of them.
Yeah.
They had more fun together.
Yeah.
They and Williams and... Well, what else do you need? I just feel like I've been rattling that I
haven't. No, you've been great. I think only one story that you told me before. So that's good.
Only one that I had only one that I repeated?
Yeah.
God, I'm not as old as I thought I was. What one was that?
It was the one where the governor walked in and said, I think something's been going on here.
Oh, really? Yeah. I told you that before?
Yeah. Mm.
I'll quit telling you.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I check him and say, ooh, what did she say this time?
Yeah.
What did she say this time?
You know, yeah. I just have to give you a little soft side of me. That's the one thing that I regret about the governor's memorial. I had told Denny I want to be last speaker, and he said, no, protocol says you have to be first. I said, no, there's no protocol.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be last because I wanted to give the human side of the governor.
Yeah.
And I just didn't get that opportunity.
No. No. And also, the Atiyah children are not the greatest.
No. Well, and I would have let them come after me, but I wanted to wrap up with the other speakers. And I asked to introduce the kids.
Yeah.
But, you know, and he had me down to 5 minutes. And I said, geez, Denny.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one time I just didn't have the energy to fight him.
I've
fought Denny all my life, and I just didn't have the, the energy or the gumption to fight him on that.
Yeah.
But I really regret it.
So let me show you some fun things that I've done to try to put context into this whole project. Let's see.
By the way, Denny wanted to see this before I gave it.
Oh, I'm absolutely positive.
But he has not seen it. He doesn't even know what's in it. You know, yeah. He's been dying to get my Rajneesh records. And I keep saying, Denny, they're not that big a deal.
Exactly. But those will come right back to you. So there are whole bunches of assertions that the governor made about himself. The first governor to do this, or the governor that did that, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have went through and I have all the gubernatorial results going back to statehood. I have every Oregon ballot measured by type.
Wow.
So one thing he repeatedly says, for instance, there might be a ballot measure, and then the legislature says we want to do this, that, and the other said, no, the people have spoken. He said that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have the ballot measures. I'll just show you the thing that I made here. So here are the ballot measures. And you don't need to know what they are, but this is the number of them and by type, and where they're passed, that they're underlined. Okay?
Wow.
So this is 1902.
These were ballot measures, right? 1912.
1912. Look at that. So it's just stunning. You can just look at them and see how they go up, down. And then he's elected into the legislature right about here.
Mm-hmm.
And look what happens. There are hardly any ballot measures. He's in there in a time when the people didn't speak very much.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
And so I'm going to be looking and saying, is this why he had a lot of faith in people? Because they didn't say much.
Well, but I'm going to say something else. Sorry to interrupt you, but people now talk like all of the ballot measures is a phenomenon now.
No.
Obviously, it's not.
Yeah, obviously, it's not. Here are the recent ones where people said, my God, look how many there are. Mm-hmm. You know, the other one goes over to here. Mm. But it's just fascinating because I suspected as much. But looking at it, he's in the low point for the use of ballot measures.
Okay.
Legislature didn't use them as much, and initiatives were rare.
Okay.
So it's just fascinating.
What do you think caused that? Was there more faith in government?
Here's one of my hypotheses. It's another one of these things. So I've also gone through and I looked at, let's see here. There we go. Statewide officials. So every statewide official that Oregon's ever had. Okay, so you don't need to know who they are. They're listed there, mm-hmm. but it's blue and red. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So boy, there's a lot of Republicans. And boy, there's a lot of Republicans. And then Vic comes in right about in here.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden there's a mix.
And then it gets.
And then it gets blue at the end.
Okay, now.
But he's in one of the very few truly bipartisan times in Oregon, in our congressional delegation, in our statewide office holders.
But we would have said differently to you. We mm-hmm. would have said we had Democrat controlled everything, but that's a narrow view.
Yeah, but and you can see I've got the legislatures listed over here on the side. It's just fascinating.
Okay, but now, Jim, you shouldn't bring these things up because I could sit and pick your brain. I would love to sit and pick your brain for days because I never got into in-depth conversations. I was just running things, that's all.
Right.
But, you know, where was I going? Where the devil was I going? Oh, I know. When Vic ran for office the first time,
mm-hmm.
it made the Republicans pretty mad.
When he ran for governor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, they were very angry.
Chosen one.
Wait a minute. You're out of balance here.
Yeah.
You're not on the schedule.
Yeah.
And it was pretty ugly. And I was such a neophyte. I knew that Clay Myers was mad at him.
Yeah.
I knew that some of the other Republicans around town were mad at him. But it didn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
Then he ran the second time and got elected, and the old stalwarts, they were very angry.
Mm-hmm.
He upset the apple cart.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hurt the Republicans. Mm-hmm. We're going to lose our way.
Yeah.
And I think about that all the time.
Yeah. No, there's a real thing.
And that's funny because to me, I wonder if that's reflected here.
So what you have just suggested is the bipartisanship might have been because there were people like Vic who were upsetting the apple cart. It's
that
a time, what, and I've just did an interview on this, we don't have entrepreneurial candidates anymore. Mm-mm. We don't have people go and say, I think I'm going to do this. Bob Packwood taking on
Yeah.
Okay. Vic. Mm-hmm. Ron Wyden taking on Bob Duncan.
Oh, yeah.
In a primary.
Big time.
You know, and basically, when I talked to Packwood, I asked him about that, and he said, well, I figured if I didn't embarrass myself, it would really set me up for a good political future.
Yeah.
And he wins by 3,000 votes.
Yeah.
And Ron Wyden, I just wanted to do it so I could figure out how to run a congressional campaign.
But look at what they both did, which also runs a parallel with Vicatia.
Mm-hmm.
They went to the people.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Vic's theory was, Jerry, I don't care if I get only a dollar donation, that means that's a vote.
Yeah, exactly.
And I will tell you, in that first time he ran, my husband was county chairman.
Mm-hmm.
Not when I say county chairman, he's chairman of all the county chairmen. Right. Plus, we were running Marion County. We had rented an old deserted service station downtown,
mm-hmm.
on a perfect corner with lots of traffic. Of course, had mm-hmm. IATA signs everywhere.
Yeah.
And that was in the day the service stations all had all their supplies.
Mm-hmm.
And we had long shelves. And Vic's campaign was writing letters to everybody. And my husband must have had 50 little blue-haired ladies every yeah. day sitting yeah. in there writing on this plain yeah. old white paper
yep.
this letter
yep.
in hand. And all of a sudden, we get a call from headquarters that says, stop, we're out of money.
Mm-hmm.
And Al looks at me and says, I can't tell those little ladies to stop. They think mm-hmm. they're doing great things.
Mm-hmm.
I said, so then we won't tell them to stop.
Yeah.
They kept writing letters. We had boxes. Letters they'd written that yeah. we quietly got rid of.
Yeah.
But that's what Vic did.
Yeah. He connected with people.
And that's what Packwood did.
Yeah.
And he got everybody stirred up. I mean, Packwood really did. That's yeah. what Wyden did with the senior citizens.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the difference.
And so that may be what's going on there.
I wonder.
Is there's an entrepreneurial thing, which doesn't exist anymore.
No.
And it's fascinating because it existed, Vic did it. I'm not sure any of the other statewide officers did.
I don't think they did.
But, for instance, in the judges, there was just a line. They all knew who each other was and who was next on the Supreme Court.
That's right.
And then Betty Roberts is in there, and we have to get a phone call saying, not this time, next time.
Because
mm-hmm. She kind of upset things,
mm-hmm.
And that didn't last very long. But it's
but that's
just,
true.
But it's, there's just this way of doing
they were being
things.
Groomed, and you waited your
yeah,
turn.
You wait your turn, and I know.
I mean, you go Hal on the Republican side. You can go Hal Appling, Clay Myers.
You betcha.
You can go through them all, and they yeah. were waiting their
and
turn.
And the Democrats are now doing exactly the same thing.
Are they really?
Yeah, yeah. Ted Wheeler, he couldn't get a chance, so now he's going to run for mayor of Portland. And Ted Wheeler, I know Jerry Frank Kitzhaber was running for his third term. Jerry Frank was telling Republicans, vote for Kitzhaber because he'll serve one term and then it'll be time for Ted Wheeler, who's a moderate Republican in reality.
Didn't work that way, did it?
No, no. But still, we've got this pegged. We're moving things through. And then who upset that? Kitzhaber upset it, not by the scandal, but because he decided to run for
a third term. He ran and got him reelected.
Yeah, yeah. It's just fascinating.
And you know what? There's something more to that story.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to know what it is.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that Peter Courtney, Kotek, all the others, literally booted him out.
Why did they, yeah.
What was the big hurry?
Yeah.
And why did they just turn on him like that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just.
There's got to be more.
Just fascinating. So here is every governor race that we've ever had. So the first part, I just have the governors, so you can look and say, oh, 1870, who ran, blah, 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 blah. But then I put them in there. So here they are by raw numbers. So their number two, Victor George Atiyah, defeats Ted Kulongoski, mm-hmm. 265,000 votes. So clearly, at that point, the biggest victory in raw numbers ever, surpassed by Sizemore. Look down here a little bit. Bob Straub beating Vicatia is towards the top as well. Mm-hmm. Vic got shellacked, mm-hmm. and yet he was the happy warrior and didn't, it just said, oh, I've met people. This is great. So it's just, it's a fascinating optimism.
That's his personality, too.
Yeah. But he got creamed. Okay, so that's great. So, but that's not what the real numbers are, because populations change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here we go by percentages.
Percentages, okay.
Okay, so Vic is now number 7.
By 25.5. Uh-huh.
Top 2, the best politician we've had in this state, yes, Earl Snell. Mm-hmm. By a mile.
Mm-hmm.
By a mile.
This one I discount because Sizemore wasn't in.
He wasn't a candidate. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a candidate. And there's other ones in here. Fun one, the very bottom, which is least in terms of raw numbers and percentages, C.C. Beekman is the banker from Jacksonville. I grew up in Medford. Everybody knows C.C. Beekman.
Who are they?
Yeah, I sent it off to my dad and said, I had no idea that C.C. Beekman, there's a Beekman house, if you go to Old Historic Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I had no idea he ran for governor, and he almost won.
Look at that narrow.
Oh, yeah. It's just amazing. Just amazing.
I'll be darned.
And then just to make it even more fun, I converted it into, if it had been 2014, the same votes that we had in 2014.
Okay.
And so, once again, here's Vic. If Vic had won in 2014, 374,000 votes. Amazing. 805,000.
Yeah, Snell had to have been.
558,000. Snell was amazing.
Yeah, he had to really be.
And then he's killed in a plane crash, mm-hmm. and no one would have any idea who he was. So I'm thinking that might be at least an article.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
But look, you know, here's Julius Meyer, number 6.
So I can't remember why he didn't want, there was a reason he didn't run for re-election.
Well, he was an independent, and he also, he governed from Manuka.
Mm-hmm.
He never came in.
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
He had his driver go back and forth, and he had a telegraph.
Right. I'd forgotten about that.
A telegraph and a phone.
Mm-hmm.
And from everything I've read, it was just basically he just said, you know, this is not what I want to do. But there's a whole bunch of them. It's very rare for people to run for re-election. I went through, because Vic has a little bit on it, you know, of the governors. These are the ones who've been re-elected. So if you look at them, there's 14 that have won 2 terms.
Hmm.
And so Vic is one of those. But of those, only 7 finished their second term.
No.
So that's Kitzhaber twice.
Yeah.
So it's just fascinating. Even if you're reelected, 50-50, you're not going to finish. It used to be because people would get elected to the Senate.
U.S. Senate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they'd go off and do that.
Yeah.
But people, especially in the late 1800s and early 1900s, they died.
Well, okay.
So it's just fascinating. So they're.
What are you going to do with all this?
I don't know. I'm having fun with it.
Well, it is fun.
Oh yeah, and this will. What I'll probably do with these is make them appendices in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely,
that's
it'll be
fun.
On the website.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be out there. But there's just so much stuff.
But, you know, go back to Vicatia losing to Straub, getting waxed by Straub.
Oh, yeah, which is, here's right there, number 10.
You know what he did? He went out to all of his campaign people. I can't say all of them. But certainly I know he interviewed my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was, should I run again or should I not?
Mm-hmm.
If I run again, would you support me again? And if I run, what do you think I should do differently?
Mm-hmm.
And he asked all of them that.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember, was that early or was that later towards the election?
I would say it was probably not more than 2 years before.
Okay. Yeah. So he's in the middle of the cycle and he's thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's great.
And he literally did. I mean, he sat down and really probed.
Yeah, that's great.
I can remember Al coming home and saying, I think Vic's going to run again.
Yeah.
I said, what'd you tell him? Well, he was pretty honest with him,
mm-hmm.
and I said, how'd he take it? He took it fine. He said, but I think he's going to go again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've interviewed tons of people on the elections, and I think each election will have a chapter Well, they might all be one, just elections. But it's really clear that his first election, which didn't even have an official campaign manager.
No.
You know, Shirley Woodward came in and they said, well, would you like to be the campaign manager? And she looked at it and said, where's the book? There is no book.
Mm-hmm.
She said, no, thanks. Mm-hmm. But it was just basically, how did I run for legislature and make it bigger? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work. But yeah, he learned a lot. But still, it's amazing. You know, he hires you, and you're still not sure why. He hires Carol Whitney to run his 78 campaign. And she
didn't know anything.
No. She went in because somebody said, oh, he might have a job for you after he loses this election. And then 10 days later, she gets a call saying, hi, would you like to run this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And she did great. And it's just like, there's something about him. I've talked to people that he hired at Atiyah Brothers.
Oh, good, yeah.
And his brother, Ed, says that Vic had the golden touch. And no one really knows how he does it, but he picks good people.
Oh, so Ed saw evidence of it, too. Oh, yeah.
Ed and Rich let him do the hiring.
Mm-hmm.
Even when he was, because after he became minority leader in 71, he was really stepping back from the business. I got a great description from somebody, actually one of the people he hired. In the Atiyah Brothers store, there was a mezzanine, and Vic's office was in the back. You could tell because the smoke was coming out.
Yeah.
And he couldn't see the floor or anything. And after 71, 72, whenever he was in there, he was just on the phone doing state stuff. So he was really stepping back, but Ed and Rich said, you know, you're the one who just does the hiring because you pick him.
Isn't that interesting? And the great faith he had in people.
Yeah, yeah.
That was, I mean, he was not, he was supreme delegator.
Yeah.
A lot of people can't delegate, Jim.
No, supreme delegator and he's got your back.
Oh,
if
yeah.
If something happens.
And he meant it.
Yeah.
You cannot believe how many sessions we had with state agency heads. And he would say over and over and over, get out of the trenches.
Yeah.
If you make a mistake, I'm with you.
Yeah.
And he meant it. I mean, he was sincere as could be.
Yeah. So here's one last thing to think about. These are, remember, this is all the proportional. So Earl, look, it's Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few Democrats in there, and there's Julius. Yes. And when Democrats win, they win by the least amounts. It's just fascinating.
Now, what does that tell us?
I don't know, because the times change. So there are certain times when we're just a solidly Republican state, and so it makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
But even now, the run that we're on right now, I mean, here's Neil Goldschmidt right here.
Mm-hmm.
Here's John Kitzhaber, Chris Dudley right here. You know, these Ted Kulongoski right here over Ron Saxton. This is the current, the Democrats hold everything, and yet they're winning by relatively small margins historically.
Well, Norma gave this away.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you right up front, I was not a supporter of Norma, but I also was not a supporter of Neil.
Yeah.
Absolutely not, because I knew too much about him at that point.
Well, the campaign has been described as she kept telling people, I have really good ideas and you should just trust me. And it's like, well, what are your ideas? Well, I know.
But, I mean, I told you about our meeting with her.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just bizarre.
Yeah.
But
she doesn't lose by much.
Well, Mike Thorne told me a story about Neil literally sitting in Eastern Oregon with Mike Thorne,
mm-hmm.
tears in his eyes that he was losing and he couldn't understand why he was.
Yeah, well, because being mayor of Portland is not enough.
That's right. But, I mean...
Yeah.
And then...
here's Barbara defeating Dave.
Yeah.
Right down there. So there, it's just fascinating.
But there was something that happened here.
Well, there was the Al Mobley thing, which actually doesn't...
No, that's not... There's something personal that happened here.
Oh, okay.
God, I can't remember what it was. But I remember we were all devastated and said, uh-oh.
When Dave was running, was it one of the kids being diagnosed or something?
I think it had to do with one of the kids. God, I have to go back in my mind.
Because that's right when I moved back.
Because we said, uh-oh.
Yeah. Uh-oh. That's right when I moved back. And my family's owned the Fred Meyers forever. And I was just stunned that Dave didn't really appear to be running an active campaign.
Well, and I think, you know, I'm quite sure it had to have to do with the kids. Was it the second child was diagnosed? I don't remember now, but it was something, and I remember we all thought,
yeah.
He's not going to run.
It's like Gordon Smith when his son committed suicide. Mm-hmm.
Just knocks the wind out of him, and they don't have the spirit anymore.
Yeah.
And I liked Dave. I really did. Dave and I had words a few times, but they were honest words. I mean, it wasn't... But then I was going to say, who else was I looking at here? This one. Dudley should have had that.
Yeah. And you look at Dudley, I mean, when you look at the Ding Dongs from 2014, no great shakes there one way or the other. But why do people insist on giving their campaigns over to people who aren't from Oregon, who don't understand where the voters are? Classic Dudley is, I'm going to start in Newport and drive on Highway 20. It's like, you know, they're all voting for you anyway. You need to go be a blazer. And you need to get Clackamas and Washington County voters. And Republicans completely forget this. The third highest concentration of Republicans is Multnomah County. And they won't campaign there.
No, I know. They give up on it.
It's like,
they
no.
They say we can't win there. We got to go out in the hinterlands. And
I actually did another thing, which I actually do in this forum, so it's useful. Multnomah County all by itself has more Republicans than the bottom 17 counties in Oregon together. It's like, you don't write that off. And Washington County has the most Republicans.
Still?
Yes. Clackamas County number two. Because that's where the population is. And they, I can't go to the Tri-County area. Democrats.
Well, don't they look at things? Don't they?
I had no idea. It just stuns me. You know, they won't go on certain radio shows because they say, it's just Multnomah County. It doesn't make any difference.
Is it the liberal versus the conservative?
Yeah, that's what they see it. But they see it as, I think it might be just psychologically, people think blue state, red state. There are no blue states and red states. They're all purple. And Republicans have given up totally on Multnomah County.
John, I can't say it. I just can't. So then how come Kitzhaber got elected again?
Because his opponent was awful.
Yeah, that.
There's nothing to vote for. It's just a vote against Kitzhaber.
But as much as people were against Kitzhaber, Republicans, as much as they knew about him, why didn't decent candidates come up? Because you know why? Nobody has the wherewithal anymore.
Nobody, no, exactly. Kitzhaber should have been challenged in the primary. Just like Kate should be challenged. She's not going to be.
Oh, God, she's already raised so much money, Jim. That...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the time, if a strong challenger hadn't come up by beginning of November,
Well, and then look who we got running on the Republican side.
Yeah.
Now, he's a wonderful man. He's done wonderful things.
He tried to reach out to me on social media, and I just did not accept. It's like, you know, I'm going to be talking about you. I don't think so.
You know, I got called when they were very early on and was asked to keep it all very confidential, but... Mm-hmm. They had a prime candidate to run, and they really wanted me to become involved. And could I be on the kitchen cabinet at the very least if I didn't want to be involved in a bigger way? And I said, first of all, I have no inclination to be involved, but if you're asking me for an answer, I have to know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got to really keep this really, really, really quiet. Okay, who is it? They told me I about fell over. Exactly. I'm expecting this dynamic person who's going to go for it. And I said, I said, he hasn't got a chance in hell. Oh, you don't know. He's such a... I said, I know him. I know him well. And I admire him. But he hasn't got a chance in hell.
No.
And I said, let me tell you a story. I took over the presidency of an organization after a doctor resigned as the president. And I said, you know what that president said to me? That doctor said to me, never, ever, ever support somebody for a high office that's a liberal doctor that knows nothing about politics or business. And I said, that's kind of where this is. And it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't believe they
No, and it's stunning that there's nobody. See, if this were Vic, this would be the minority leader of the Senate. This would be Ted Farrioli saying, what the hell?
That's right.
And they're frozen, too. The Democrats have their line. Who's next? And it may get a little confusing, but there's a line.
But the Republicans don't know what the hell to do.
No, they don't have a line. And they don't have anybody who steps forward and says, oh, this would be
all they can do is moan and groan. Yeah. Oh, the gosh damn radical conservatives are ruining us. And, you know, Portland and that area controls the election. We haven't got a chance up there.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they talk about, Jim.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I was having fun with you. Now you're depressing me.
Sorry.
No, and I am a nonpartisan person. I have to tell you, I don't vote straight party ever. Never have.
Mm-hmm.
And they never will.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm having hard time finding candidates that I even were interested in voting for.
Oh, yeah.
And the presidential election is driving me up a wall.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It'll continue to do so.
This is so fun. So fun.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of just fun things in here. Douglas McKay.
He was highly revered.
He was.
His family's still around, and I love them all.
Here's a fun one, too. I did presidential elections. So, just read the stuff at the top.
We have voted 10 times out of 39.
For the person who didn't become president.
What does that mean?
Well, so we voted for, say that we voted for Wilkie instead of Truman. Instead of Truman.
Gotcha. Okay.
Voted
for incumbent in 14 out of 23 opportunities. Despised Grover Cleveland.
We just kept hating him more and more and more.
Yeah. We really didn't like him, did we?
He didn't even beat the third party candidate the third time he ran.
We really didn't like him. Okay. We never chose Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were smart. Oregon voters chose candidate opposing either of the George Bushes four times. Really?
Yeah. Always voted against the Bush.
I don't know why that surprises me.
Yeah, no, the especially George Sr.
Yeah, I've said the younger maybe, but not the older.
He should have been, but he was there. You know, he's running the first time in 88, right as the switch is happening.
Yep.
So.
But now, you talk about two peas in a pod. I would put him and Vic Attia very much alike.
Absolutely.
And they really enjoyed each other.
Yeah, yeah.
We've chosen a presidential candidate since 1988. Horatio Seymour.
Exactly.
Really? In every election, we favor Republican candidate in every election except the LBJ?
Yeah, and I'll show you the streaks. I've got them marked.
Of course, that was the Nixon time.
Yeah.
23 have been elected along with 16 Democrats.
So, just looking at the, here are the streaks on the side.
What are the streaks?
These are just Republicans. We're voting for Republicans.
Oh, okay.
So here's that Seymour guy. But look at the streak. Streak. So that goes up to 1904, 1908.
And then
there's a mix. Mm-hmm. Mix. And FDR is part of that mix.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a mix. Then we do another streak.
What did we do with FDR?
Yeah, we voted for FDR each time.
Okay.
It was relatively close, but... Okay. So then we do another streak from 48 to 84, except for Goldwater.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just turn the switch. And there we are. We're blue, 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 blue.
Isn't that interesting?
And the blue one is not as long as either of the two Republican ones.
The dynamics.
Yeah. And look, this is Jimmy Carter is beaten by Gerald Ford, another 0.1% election.
I'd forgotten that, but it was close.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten that. The Ford era was a disappointment.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Then I did the same thing with the governors. So I did the margins by proportion and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Teddy Roosevelt, our strongest candidate. But even here, look, it's Republicans at the top.
Yeah. Hmm.
Here's, it's amazing how similar they are. So Bill Clinton is here and Bill Clinton is here.
Mm-hmm.
Roosevelt's kind of all over the place, actually. After and Vic in 1940, Vic's remembrance is, I don't know if he opposed Roosevelt or not. I imagine he did, but he just was the gall of the guy to run for a third time.
Yeah, yeah.
Just really got to
that
him.
Doesn't surprise
and,
me.
And the in 32 Roosevelt wins strongly. In 36 he does pretty darn well, and then it's much closer for 40 and 44.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can believe Vic would have felt that way. That's too egotistical for
yeah.
him.
Yeah, yeah. Just fun stuff.
Hmm.
These are just footnotes on.
Yeah.
Things that are so close that I. This is Howard, they're winning.
I told you, I'm going to lock you up and just pick your brain. What fun.
So this is actually just from one line in, I think it was in the tax thing, because I was working on that. And it's 1982, Atiyah had been reelected by the largest number to that time. And I said, well, did he? Was it really the largest number?
Mm-hmm.
And so that led to that.
That's what
which
that...
this. And so it's great and it's fun. And it's also fun to figure out, so how do I make this useful to me? How do I organize
yes.
this? So actually, I'm going to talk to our political science juniors who are going to be writing senior theses. About how to think about this stuff.
Hamid.
So I'll just bring you on. This is what Hamid. I did. This one here took a day and a half, and of that day and a half, a day of that was just trying things and saying, no, that doesn't say what I want it to say. You can't just plug it into the program on your computer that
right.
makes graphs.
Right.
Because it is trying to sell soap.
Yeah.
You have to figure out, what is this, what do you want it to do?
Yeah. Oh, Hamid.
So, but it's just that one line. And the reason was, why did the sales tax come up? Well, because after the 82 election, Vic kind of started mentioning sales taxy kinds of things. He had the, back what they were talking about with the ballot measure, where they're going to have the corporate receipts tax.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He had exactly a corporate receipts tax.
Yep.
And it just disappeared in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went and did the math. In today's dollars, his corporate receipts tax would have been $1.5 billion.
Wow. Really?
Now, what they're asking for is $5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of tax raises, that $1.5 billion would be the biggest tax raise we've ever had.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that segues into other things in terms of a sales tax and all that other stuff. But it's just fascinating. Just fascinating.
Do you sleep at night?
Yes.
You must have your wheels turning so hard and so fast that...
Yeah, you do wake up and you have dreamt about this stuff. Oh, here's... Did you get one of these things from the library about where the Governor Atiyah Project is?
No.
Are you on the library mailing list?
I think I am.
Oh, make sure you get one.
Oh.
So this is just the newsletter we sent out for Christmas.
Yeah.
To basically say, here's what's going on, and if you want more money, or please give us more money.
A note from Tom Atiyah.
Yeah, yeah. So, when I finally pegged down Bob Packwood, which took a lot because he ignored me for 9 months. And I went through Elaine, and Elaine said, it's totally up to him.
Mm.
So that's fine. So I just thought, I'll just try every 4 or 5 months.
Which is baloney.
I'll just try. But I was at the Old Timers, Martin's Old Timers, in December.
The one I didn't go to.
And Packwood said something about, because he was sitting, there was Bob Jones on this side and Jim Redden on this side. They all came in as freshmen together in 62.
Jim Redden Sr.?
Yeah, Jim Redden Sr.
How's he doing?
Much.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
I didn't think so.
Yeah, I'm not going to interview him.
Yeah.
But Bob Packard was talking, well, in the old days, you know, we used to have the districts were by county. So mm-hmm. we were at large seats, and he mentioned something about it. And so people were just introducing themselves and came around to me and said, you know, who I am? And I said, well, and I'd like to pick up, you know, Vicatia loved that old system. He didn't like it when it went to one person. I later found out Packwood's the one who pushed to have the new system. So I just, you know, played off of that. And so the next day I sent a note off to Bob saying, hi, it was really good to see you yesterday. And hear what you had to say. I'd love to talk to you on the Atiyah book. And he responded fairly quickly, like 3 days. And he said, I just don't really have anything to add. You know all this stuff. And so Pack and said, Vic wanted this about, it's not about Vic, it's about context, and a guy named Vicatilla lived there. You're full of context. There were four great moderate Republicans, and you're the only one who's left alive. I'd love to talk to you about that.
Good thinking.
Vic took on an incumbent governor. The last time an incumbent governor was beaten. I'd love to pick your brain about why you chose to take on incumbent Senator Morse. And I know you told Denny at the memorial service that's not the way the Columbia Gorge came into being. And I need to get your side of the
Hook.
Story. 6 days. Well, I think we can meet. Here's my schedule. What is it like that? I'm in D.C. here, I'm in D.C. there. And in the middle of all this, it changes to Bob and Jim. He's signing them Bob. Because I always, you know, Senator Packwood.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Jim Moore.
I love it.
And then, you know,
I love
Bob
it.
And Jim. It's just, it was just fascinating.
So, but did
then,
it go well?
Yeah, yeah, it went well. And then the last time I talked to him before I went to interview him, he said, oh, do you have more of these?
Oh, I said, really?
I said, yeah. I said, could I have about four of them? So I went to the library and I said, do you have more of these? And he just handed me a bunch of envelopes and said, here you go. And so I gave them to him. He's happy as a clam. And I don't know if he wants them to show people this is what's happening out there. We're hoping that people want to give us money. But it's just fascinating.
Yeah.
Something's clicking.
Yeah.
Something's clicking there.
You raised his curiosity to a level that he's...
Yeah.
Because he has been kind of shut away.
He really has.
Mm-hmm.
He really has.
That's too bad.
Yeah. He has a lot to offer.
He's the one that started Dorchester Conference, isn't he?
He sure is.
Which was a big boon in its day.
Which specifically excluded conservative Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was his way of battling it.
It was the Goldwater thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he talked about that.
That was a big deal.
He couldn't remember, and who knows if he did. That's why I'd love to see his diary. Vic talks about walking on the beach with him
mm-hmm.
in 85.
Mm-hmm.
March
of
85.
There's a picture of that somewhere.
There may be. But what Vic is saying is, Bob, I've decided not to run against you for the U.S. Senate
mm-hmm.
in 86.
Mm-hmm.
And Vic has, you know, well, you know, Bob kind of smiled or something like that.
Chuck
Bob said, I don't have any memory of that. It's like, that's fine. That's fine. I got enough on the Vic side. I'll just run it anyway.
You want some more water?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Bob was an interesting guy.
Yeah.
He really was. Wow.
Yeah. Doing a biography of him would be so fascinating because...
I'm surprised Elaine hasn't done something on that.
Yeah. But it's got to be full access.
Yeah.
He's got to surrender.
Well, I'll tell you something else. While Elaine's around, it won't happen.
No, the full...
She is his supreme protector.
Yeah. And the thing is, whoever the biographer were, like, you know, if I were to write about Bob, yeah, of course the scandal brought him down. It's a chapter. But it's not the book.
No.
It's not the book. Give me a break.
It's a fact that's already known.
Yeah, exactly.
That people have said, how sad.
Exactly. It's not that. I mean, and he's been around now. He's been out of office long enough. You know, he still goes back and briefs every new Ways and Means Committee and every new Senate Finance Committee.
I was
going to
ask you, what's he going back there for? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Really?
He goes and he tells them the story of the 86 tax stuff because, and I found out because he told me the story too, and I checked into it. He tells the half that makes him look good. But it's because it's still the same tax laws. Mm. He still knows it better than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And the tactics he used
mm-hmm.
are really useful to know. You couldn't replicate them because the personalities are different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's saying, okay, here's a box. We're in it. What do you do to break out of this to come up with a practical, pragmatic solution?
See, that was the good side of Bob.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thinking we don't have anymore.
No. No.
Too bad.
Yeah.
And I don't know anybody coming up through the ranks.
No. No. You look at there, he's too far to the left and too pugnacious. But Peter DeFazio was like that for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And in the House, it takes so long to get any power.
Yeah.
That he's kind of ossified.
Yeah.
He's kind of a cartoon of himself.
Well, and I look at Greg Walden.
Yeah. Greg
who
is,
I thought someday he's going to have a great political future. Nah, he's become one of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's stale.
Yeah. He's stale and
he doesn't. He can't even find the box, let alone get out of it.
No, no.
It's sad.
Yeah. And with Denny pushing things and I push things, I try to get him to, I'll meet you at the airport at 11 o'clock at night before your red eye. I need to talk to you for this book.
You haven't yet?
No.
I don't know what's happened to Greg. Really, really don't know what's happened to him. He's forgotten where he came from.
Yeah. Just his words when he was talking about the birds thing. It's like,
mm-hmm.
Bob Smith would have laughed at you. Much less somebody like Al Ullman or something like
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah, he's not a statesman.
Mm-mm.
Not a deep thinker.
Mm-mm.
And I used to think he was. He's not.
Mm-mm.
He's become the same old, I'm all in this for myself. And
yeah.
God, it just disappoints me something terrible.
Yeah.
I quit contributing to him. My confession, but I
mm-hmm.
did.
Mm-hmm.
When he first went back, we thought, oh boy.
Yeah, go back and cut your teeth.
Well, even at one time, we thought, he could be good material for governor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad it didn't happen.
No. Well, the thing that about him that alerted me right away that there was something different than what I thought about him, Bob Smith, when he was in, and he also, like Vic, didn't ask about party identification.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
Now, he did while he was Speaker of the House.
Interesting.
But he didn't when he was in Congress. And I knew his whole Medford office.
Mm-hmm.
So, Cooley comes in and basically just goes straight party line, and Smith goes back in and says, no. Walden fired all the Democrats first day.
Really?
Yeah. And it's like, I didn't expect that.
No, I would not have expected that.
Didn't expect that at all.
Particularly in his first round, I would never have.
No, this is, you know nothing about Medford or Klamath Falls
no.
or Lakeview.
No.
This is your brain right here. Fired them all.
That sends me a message, not necessarily about his politics, but about his abilities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, he didn't want to be challenged.
No. No.
I'm the know-it-all, and I'll take care of it.
Yeah.
God. How disappointing. Too bad. He came from a great family, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Too bad.
It's also interesting, looking at these, there are very, looking at the results since the beginning of statehood, relatively few families. Elmo and Denny Smith.
That's the only one I know of.
I think that's it for these statewide things. Legislature's full of them.
Yeah,
but
legislature is full.
But we don't have, we don't have the Bai family in Indiana. We don't have the Daley family
well,
in Chicago.
You had the Roberts family.
That's right, but no. Well, Mary Wendy.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Wendy was in there.
Mm-hmm.
But she's on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So, one last thing before I go. My wife and I were invited to a dinner party by a fellow faculty member. It's like, sure, we'll go to a dinner party. It's Sunday before Christmas. And so we have plans on that Sunday. We're going to an afternoon matinee of a play, so you know, we can't be there until about 5:30. If it's later than that, let us know. But we'll be going home and coming back, and it's a long way. So he said, "Oh, that's fine. So just come over when you're done. You guys will get here 5-ish. Everybody else will get here 5:30." So we go, and it's comedy of errors, including the host's wife leaving for an hour and a half to go pick up her son in the middle of it. Weird, but guests, Rex Armstrong and Leslie Roberts.